Hari Om Sarana Bhavatu Sarana Bhunatu Sarana Viryam Karavavahai Tejasvina Varitamastu Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Okay, page 59. When they saw the great fortune of the Lord's personal associates, the four Kumaras became ashamed that they had cursed the Lord's associates. They said, Bhagavatam 3:16:25, O Lord, whatever punishment you wish to award to these two innocent persons, or also to us, we shall accept without duplicity. We understand that we have cursed two faultless persons. That because before that, they were thinking how they were behaving, is that they were, imposters. That's their original thing. They thought they were imposters. So because of this, then they felt that it was appropriate that they cursed them and dealt the way they did. But now, by the Lord coming out and how he's behaving, right? He's telling them that they're my servants, and so because they've done something wrong, I've done something wrong. So then they can understand that it's not just, and how he's doing, it's not just simply a management thing. That, you know, I'm in charge of this, and so something went wrong in this, so I'm taking responsibility. He understood the personal connection, right? So they weren't just anybody, but they were actual personal associates, right? So now the four Kumaras could understand what they had done was wrong. So that they had given a curse, because the Brahmin's curse is there, whatever it happens, then that, I mean, whatever they say, that will happen. But now they're adjusting that to say, whatever you think should be the punishment, meaning that whatever they've said doesn't have to be what's going to happen. You know, it can either be revoked or left as it is, adjusted, or whatever the Lord likes. So they're just leaving it up to that, rather than, no, we've spoken it, it has to happen. Right? Yes.
Can we say that they changed their mind regarding the curse also because they became devotees? Or it has nothing to do with that?
Oh, no, that's an aspect. But in this context, then Jiva Goswami is bringing out that the difference between the Kumara's position as jnana, you know, it means how you say, the devotees on the platform of jnana, and then those who are personal associates, like that. So actually, even though the focus is around, in this pastime, the four Kumaras, but actually, it's the two doorkeepers are actually more intimate with the Lord than they are. But in this, we're also seeing the transformation from being simply impersonalist to being personalist. You know, so all these things are happening. So it's just a matter of which one you're bringing out. But yes, of course, because they're devotees, because now they can understand the personal relationship. Because before, it was, they're simply looking at it from the platform of Gyan. So then it's either they're transcendentally situated or not. Right? So there wouldn't be the feelings. It would just be, okay, we've made a mistake here. They actually are advanced. Right? They are transcendental. But it's taking beyond that they're personal associates of the Lord. So that's the devotional aspect that you're seeing. Does that make sense? But at the same time, that the culture and everything is there is bringing that out, right? Because the culture is supposed to enhance the personal, right? Because in the Vedic culture is that you have this wide variety of philosophies, and basically none of them are atheistic, but they accept the supremacy of the Lord. But it's not that the supremacy of the Lord has any personal effect upon them. Does that make sense? Just like in your day-to-day life, it probably doesn't mean a whole lot about the position of whoever runs the country. No, it means you're going to go to the same shops, eat the same food, and drive your car in the same way, whether you know the person or not. Right? It just doesn't matter. But you know they're there. You know they're a person. Right? But it doesn't have any effect. So in the Vedic system, it all has that, but then that means underlying there is an impersonal aspect. Because if you're not personal, that must be there's something impersonal. But the culture is personal, because the culture is the culture of the spiritual world. Right? Now, whether someone understands that on the personal platform, therefore applies it in that purely personal way, or that they are simply applying it as rules and regulations, it still has basically the same effect. Does that make sense? You know, just like you meet somebody and they shake your hand. Now they're shaking your hand just because that's the etiquette, that's what you're supposed to do. But it maintains a environment of civility, right? Now if they actually know you have affection and they do that, then it's so much better. That's the real reason for it. So the Vedic system is just to maintain at least that personal civility. Though actually it's meant to cultivate that personal relationship. Does that make sense? So that's the advantage of it, that at a minimum it does that. You know what I'm saying? So basically most cultures of the world have some remnant of that. The difficulty is in the modern kind of context, since it's always attacking authority, it also attacks tradition, which means it attacks all these aspects of culture. And so then slowly these break down where you don't have any of these things, you know, or they're greatly reduced. Does that make sense? Yeah. So here is that the by understanding this, both through the culture and through their devotional now understanding, then we see that we have this response. So that's why anything done, if it's done in the mood of devotion, always gets a better result than if it's not. Right? If it's done with devotion, it gets a perfect result. If it's done without devotion, but according to the rules, then it's pious. If it's done without devotion and not according to the rules, it's impious. Right? Does that make sense? Right. And if we just have to think, but what about if it's done without the rules but with devotion? Then it's mixed. Right? In other words, people are not culturally satisfied, but, you know, there is something there to work with. Right? After the four Kumaras had departed, the Supreme Lord openly revealed His mercy to His personal associates. He said, Srimad Bhagavatam 3:16:29, "The Lord then said to His attendants, Jai and Vijay, depart this place, but fear not. All glory is unto you. Although I am capable of nullifying the Brahmana's curse, I would not do so. On the contrary, it has my approval." Right, so he could nullify, but he's saying he's not, because the whole point is that it has his approval. Because the principle is that things unfolding according to the pastimes, that's always much more tasty than just it being done by mystic power. Does that make sense? Right? Because the mystic, one has power, okay, that gets done. But if someone does something because they want to do it, or another, then it's so much nicer. Does that make sense? Yeah. So for the Lord, this this arrangement of his fighting with the Jayan Vijaya, it's so much better if it has the arrangement also of being connected with these four Kumaras. You know, their curse and this whole pastime, them becoming a devotee. So many things happen at once. That's the advantage. Right? Because then it enhances personal relation. You do something on your own, what's the meaning? You know? The electricity's not working right, you're sitting there alone. So, you know, with your mystic power, you fix it and things goes on. But it's just you. But then if it's not working and then you mention to somebody and they say, hey, I'll do something about it. And does that make sense? It has so much more to it. The other one just makes the environment nice. But actually the only purpose of a nice environment is to interact with people, to experience that interaction. Does that make sense? Yes.
So whatever happens to us, we can say it has approval of the Lord, impersonal or personal. So this is the only difference.
Yes.
So we shouldn't fight out, you know, situation or whatever it happens. We just accept it.
Yes. We don't fight the situation, but we perform our duties in that situation. Right? Because the idea is that life is dynamic. So if you're supposed to be doing something, let's say for the grihastha, he's supposed to be providing economic facility for the family. He makes an endeavor, it doesn't work. It's not that he sits back, oh, it's the Lord's mercy, and then sits back and that's it. But he looks at it, okay, that didn't work by the Lord's arrangement. And he thinks of another way, and he continues at it. But the point is whatever does come, that's he takes as the Lord's mercy, and that's what he lives with. But as a grihastha, it's his duty to create or generate some facility. Does that make sense? So there's always a balance. Otherwise, it's just, we just sit back, we'll do nothing, you know. Whether I get out of the bed this morning, that's up to the Lord's mercy, or maybe not, you know, like that. Whether I get breakfast in bed or not, you know, like this. So, does that make sense? So there is the endeavor, but that endeavor should be according to duties. If it's not your duty and something happens, then you just leave it because you don't have technically an authority to try to adjust it. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You don't have it. Though people nowadays, the idea is I take advantage of any situation possible to get what I want. Right? So that's cheating. Because you can't have everything. You know? Does that make sense? You know, it's just like if the situation is favorable for them to claim that they're the authority, they will. But if it's to their advantage to say, I'm not the authority, then they'll do that. You know, it's just like if you're in a committee, then you can either say, well, hey, we're the authority, or you can say, well, it's not me, it's the bureau, you know. You know what I'm saying? So that's the problem, is those who are cultured, they'll take one or the other. And then they'll take whatever comes with it. You know? Does that make sense? So you don't have, if I am the authority, Then when it's good, then it's there. And if it's not good, you're still the authority. We're still responsible. We've made this decision. You know, as a group, the group made a decision. I'm part of the group, so therefore I have to represent the group. So therefore, yes, this is what happened. If it's not good, we take responsibility. Or you can say is that I'm just part of the group, so I'm not actually an authority as such. So therefore, I can't take personal authority when I would find it to be an advantage. No, I'm always just part of the group. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So that's the point of the duty, means there'll always be something that's advantage, something that's disadvantage. But the modern concept is that I will always make adjustments as if I can see it's to my advantage. Like that. So that's not proper, because then nothing's stable, nothing's steady, so no one can have a sense of security. And that's the whole point of Sambandha. Facilities and arrangements and organization is so that there's security. Right? So that people feel secure. Like in the modern society, people don't feel secure. You know, I mean, that's top to bottom. If you go back in Western history, okay, the serfs never feel really secure, but everybody else did. You know, I don't mean the guys on Bondi Beach. You know what a serf? Serfs are the local guy out in the village that's covered from head to foot with cow dung. Right? The guy that comes riding up on a nice white horse and is not covered with cow dung. That's your. Those are the guys that are secure. So, yeah.
I'm just thinking in this connection that in the case of the Kumaras, if they curse the giant Vijay, and then when the Lord appears, they would say, "Well, we're sorry, we're just kids. You know, what can we do?"
Yeah. But that's the problem, is seeing that they're the, other than Brahma, the oldest in the universe, it might not fly.
It's not our fault.
Yeah. No, but it's they see the position, because they're devotees now. So they see, actually, even because they're liberated, they wouldn't try an excuse. They would just deal with the facts. You know, so that's, on the impersonalist platform, they would be, what do you call it? It's a name for it. It's a name of brutally honest. Yes, I think that's the term. And what's brutally honest? That means in any situation, whether it's good for you or bad for you, you're honest. Like that. So an impersonalist is always going to be on that platform. But it's always according to Shastra, so it never has an emotional content to it. So it actually never comes out brutal. It's just honest. So then they wouldn't do that. And now as devotees in that rasa, that will remain. Right. Is that, yeah, because there's no feelings to hide or anything, because there's no sense of possession. Right? And the others, there might be something to hide because of the rasa. You know, it'll enhance the rasa, so something said or not said. But with them, it's just, these are the facts, they just deal on that platform. So that's why it has an openness, but it doesn't have the sweetness. Right? So, you know. The following Priti Sandarbha Anucheda 7 commentary relates the power of the Lord's illusory potency in bringing Jayan Vijay to fight with him. At the same time, his protection of them remained. The power of the Lord's illusory potency is also seen in the activities that led Jayan Vijay to take birth as demons. The Lord's illusory potency acted only very slightly on Lord Balaram. However, it acted very powerfully on Jayan Vijay. This is because Lord Balaram was full of love for Krishna, but Jaya and Vijaya were not. Jaya and Vijaya did not become demons merely by the sage's curse, but rather by the will of the Supreme Lord himself. Right? Because otherwise, being associates, nothing can happen without the Lord's approval. And as associates, then especially, it's not going to happen other than the way he prefers it. Right? Because people can't come in and make trouble like that. So, yeah. The Lord confirms this in these words of Srimad Bhagavatam, 3:16:29. The Lord then said to his attendants, "Jaya and Vijaya, depart this place, but fear not. All glories unto you. Though I am capable of nullifying the Brahman's curse, I would not do so. On the contrary, it has my approval." This is how he wanted to go. It happens that way. So it's technically not because of the Brahman's curse that it happened. But for the pastime, it's happening because of the Brahman's curse. So the Lord's allowing it. Right? That's the... Jayan Vijaya's acceptance of the role of eminent enemies of the Lord was not their own doing. Rather, it was personally arranged by the Lord. In Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.2, it is said, "O Lord, whatever you desire is at once fulfilled." Still, the Lord was merciful to Jayan Vijaya, who were his devotees. It is said in Srimad Bhagavatam 6.11.23, "Our Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, forbids his devotees to endeavor uselessly for religion, economic development, and sense gratification. O Indra, one can thus infer how kind the Lord is. Such mercy is obtainable only by unalloyed devotees, not by persons who aspire for material gain." So uselessly for religion, economic and develop. I mean, economic development, sense gratification. So if it's something useful, according to duties, to be engaged in the Lord's service, then one can expand these as much as is important. Like Yudhishthira had a kingdom. So therefore, you're not going to get, or let's say a kingdom, he had an empire. He was the king of the whole world. So the facility for that is going to be greater than anybody nowadays would have. Right, even the top people nowadays, were very impressed by their money, their power, their facility, influence. Then his was much greater than that. Because these are just running a country and not even running it that greatly, you know, that well. So you're talking about running the whole planet really nice. So that means if it's so nice, everything goes up. Because the Vedic system is not that economy is based on someone has to lose for you to gain. Right? It's a matter of everybody can gain. Because it's a matter of getting the facilities, not about having the money to buy facilities. Right? It's like, why do I need more money if everything's cheap? Right? I don't require it. So therefore, it's cheap, everybody has. Why? Because there's tons of it. But the modern concept is that I will make more money if there's less of it. Right? So therefore, you have it a surplus, you dump it in the ocean, you do something with it. And so therefore, then now I can make more money. But then the problem is I need more money because everything costs so much. So it's not really, it's not that smart of a system, but whatever, pop it. Right? So that's the whole point, is that whatever is useful, that's what's endeavored for. And if it's not, then why bother? If it's actually going to be of use, you get it. You don't worry that, oh, this is very opulent. If it works, you get it. But if it's not, then you don't bother. Is that makes sense? Yeah. Okay, so that therefore that someone has that understanding, now that's the Lord's mercy. Because a materialist cannot understand this. So the devotees, they can appreciate that, okay, how much I require, that I endeavor for. I have a, what do you call it? I have my duties, and so therefore what's within that duties, I endeavor to my best. Right? It's not that the king thinks, oh, I'll be humble and not have so much. No, he has to have plenty. If he doesn't look richer than everybody else, no one will take him seriously. Even though the richness has nothing to do with his administrative ability. But still, like I remember we went up to Sikkim once. I don't know if it's how the situation now, this would have been, I'm not sure, when 70s or early 80s or something, you know. So we went up there and we went to the big bad city there, which looked like a small, very small town in India. And we saw the king's palace, the king of Sikkim's palace. I mean, they weren't it means if you go to, you know, most kind of, well, I don't know, at least in Los Angeles, you know, in some areas of there, they have houses like that. Big wooden houses, many bedrooms and stuff like that. That was the presidential palace, right? Because everybody else lived in a hovel. Right? So that they had, he had a big wooden house. I don't mean big, big. I mean, we're not talking, what is it? Ceausescu? How do you say the guy's name? That, like that? We're not talking his big, you know, 1,000 room palace thing here. We're talking just a big, you know, probably a 6-bedroom wooden house. Right? So when I saw that, I'm thinking, that's the king's palace? Those are just around the corner from where I live. You know, it's like that. So then you don't really think greatly of the kingdom. If that's all the kingdom can produce, it's not a great kingdom. But if the palace is something amazing, then you think, okay, something's going on here. This guy has power, influence, right? Abilities. So, because otherwise, if you're not managing nice, nothing's developed. Like I think it was an even more extreme example. I forget what tribe it is, but there's some tribe in Africa that the king has a special nose thing. It's a little silver nose kind of I don't know. It's something that goes on his nose. Otherwise, he's dressed exactly the same as everybody else. Like that. And because, and who, you know, it's just like in Europe, you have a crown. He has the nose thing. So I'm not sure if it like keeps the dust out or something, but it's something special that makes him the king. Right? So you can understand there's not a whole lot of economic development there. Right? Does that make sense? Well, you see other places they go in. Where was it? Who is it? Solomon, who is the big queen? You don't remember? From Ethiopia. She came there. But very, very opulent.
Bathsheba?
I'm not sure it was Bathsheba. Maybe. But at least that was the name I thought of. And then I thought, well, wait a minute. Wasn't she something like that? But what? Yeah. That very, very opulent. Very wealthy. Very powerful. Right? So then you think, okay, here's a powerful person. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's why then for a king, he will use whatever needs to be done to establish his position, his duties. Does that make sense? So that's the way it works. Yeah. That the Supreme Lord continued to protect Jaya and Vijaya is seen in these words of Srimad Bhagavatam 10.2.23. O Madhava, Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord of the Goddess of Fortune, if devotees completely in love with you sometimes fall from the path of devotion, they do not fall like non-devotees, for you still protect them. So the devotee falling is very different from the materialist falling. The materialist has a position, he falls from that, it's pretty solid. But the devotee, even though their situation may change, but still the consciousness is such that they still remember the Lord and understand how this is stupid. Right? Does that make sense? But they, you know, of course will adjust with their new situation, but that's very different. So the Lord's always protecting, because we see here is how you view things that is mainly the Lord's mercy. Yes.
Well, we see with the history of Jaya Vijaya afterwards, they seem don't really mind what the Lord did, and they didn't really remember afterwards.
Yes, but here for the pastime, they're being taken care of. It's, like they said, it's not like Jaya Vijaya became the largest worms in Creamy Bojan and therefore were threatening the universe or something. You know, or like Maheshasura, they're a buffalo, right? You know, like that. Okay, so you take over the seat of Indra. You're still a buffalo. You know? You know what I'm saying? It's still, okay, everyone accepts that you're more powerful than they are, but it's a buffalo. You know? You know, so when the guy comes out and says, so what's happening? Hey, the buff said we should do this. You know? Yeah. So, you know, and we're not talking fashion here. We're talking, you know, so. But here's that they were, you know, very powerful, good birth. You know, I mean, their dynasty is very good, right? They're coming from the Prajapatis. They're very powerful, you know, steel-like bodies, and they have mystic powers. They're knowledgeable in the shastras. They're cultured on, you know, whatever level they want to apply it. Like we'll see in the fight between Hiranyaksha and Varaha, that he's following the etiquette of single combat. You know, so all these things they're doing. So this just shows piety, right? Good birth, education. Right? No, technically no legal problems. Right? In fact, they set the rules. Right? That they're not ugly, they're beautiful. Right? They're socially well situated. You know, that they take advantage of everything, so therefore. Does that make sense? So that technically there's no results of sin. So you can say that's the Lord is taking care. And from the other point is they prayed that they would never forget the Lord, and they don't. It's just not favorable, but all they do is think about the Lord. Does that make sense? So you have to combine the combination of what's going on there. Because it's the external is there, and they are also always absorbed in the Lord. Because one of the symptoms of the Lord's mercy is externally everything's nice. But more important than that is the mentality is nice. That makes sense. So they're always remembering the Lord, but by yoga maya, they have to forget him, because otherwise how do they fight? Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, I think it was Richard II. Was he the lion-hearted one? Yeah. He was the first. Okay, he was first. So he would go out because he, you know, had that martial spirit. He wanted to joust. But he couldn't, because if the king was there, either people would just say he's won, or they would come out and not make much of an effort. So he would have to hide his identity, right? And then come out onto the jousting field, then so that people would actually properly joust with him. You know? But if somehow or another, through the grapevine, someone figured out, then that was it. They wouldn't fight. You know, because they're the king. They figure, if I do beat him, then, you know, that's the results aren't going to be great. But he just wanted to fight. So that's the whole point. So without yoga maya, how are Jaya and Vijaya going to fight? They'll always, you know, they'll always, if they have an advantage, they'll always allow the benefit for the Lord. So, plus, the long-term thing is they're only going to be 3 lifetimes, then they go back to their position. While for the Nitya Bada, the word Nitya is there, we understand, because one is that it's happened from the transcendental platform, so we can't actually, it doesn't come with time. But two is the amount of time we've been here is so long, no one can calculate it. Right? Because if it was only 3 births, we would be a sage. Right? First Brahma, then Prajapatis, then sage, then worm and stool, right? You know, so, okay, there's a few things in between, right? You know, right? Yeah.
Well, for them, time seems to be different, because they went 1, 2, 3, and it was Satya, Treta, and Dwapara.
Yeah.
So it was according to the eternal time, or I...
Yeah, so it's just, you know, it just works out, because the point is that they're going to be, you know, have that time to personally associate with the Lord, so they have to come whenever the Lord is coming, like that. So it has to cooperate, I mean, connect with that. Yeah, so it's that's the whole point. Yoga Maya is arranging all these things. Yeah, because they didn't have to go to hell in between, right? You know, where you have human birth, and then there's a gap, there's another human birth. There's probably a lot in between. Srila Prabhupada writes conclusively in his purport to verse 37. When something is arranged by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one should not be disturbed by it, even if it appears to be a reverse according to one's calculations. For example, sometimes we see that a powerful preacher is killed. This is that one. Yeah. Or sometimes he's put into difficulty, just as Haridas Thakur was. He was a great devotee who came into this material world to execute the will of the Lord by preaching the Lord's glories. But Haridas was punished at the hands of the Qazi by being beaten in 22 marketplaces. Similarly, Lord Jesus Christ was crucified, and Prahlad Maharaj was put through so many tribulations. The Pandavas, who were direct friends of Krishna, lost their kingdom. Their wife was insulted, and they had to undergo many severe tribulations. Seeing all these reverses affect devotees, one should not be disturbed. One should simply understand that in these matters there must be some plan of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Bhagavatam's conclusion is that a devotee is never disturbed by such reverses. He accepts them, even reverse conditions as the grace of the Lord. One who continues to serve the Lord, even in reverse conditions, is assured that he will go back to Godhead, back to the Vaikuntha planets. So the reverse is because we don't know the bigger picture. Right? The natural thing is you would think everything should just go fine. But why would we take Prahlad Maharaj's instructions and his position so seriously if he just grew up as a normal kid and everything just went very nice and pleasant? Right? No, because he went to, you know, he went through all those tribulations that we would not be able to go through. That means he must be, there must be something special. Therefore, when he speaks, we tend to listen. Right? Or Jesus Christ, is that, it's like this. He gave so many nice instructions, but is that what people remember him by?
No,
he died for our sins, right? That's all. If he hadn't died, then no one would take him seriously. Right? There was a whole tribe of Essenes, so why, you know, so the knowledge is about. So what's the specialness? No, he's the one that died for us. So therefore now, you know, it's just like they wear the cross, you know, so it's not, it's about remembering him dead on the that's okay, now that makes him special. But as far as what he taught, you know, who knows about that, you know? Who cares? Is that the sense? So, therefore, there's something greater at work. That's why one shouldn't be worried about reverses, Hari Das Thakur. Because of that position, then he is seen as what a great personality he was, how dear he was to the Lord. Right? So now everyone will take very seriously his chanting. Otherwise, oh yeah, he's the fanatic guy that chants all day. No, his chanting all day, you know, has the full approval of the Lord. So, because he is doing the essence of the whole process. Right? Does this make sense? Yeah. So that's, if one is able to, and then in our own life, things don't necessarily go the way we want. We just understand it's the Lord's mercy. So we continue at it. We make that endeavor. And because of that endeavor, everything works nicely. Does that make sense? Right? Because the whole idea is to become God conscious and go back to Godhead. You know, having good facility here, that just makes it easier. But it's not that getting good facility is the real purpose. It's that the good facility has use in devotional service. That was what was the previous point. Is that the devotee can understand this. Now, why can they understand? Because they can understand that having facility or not having facility, it's all the Lord's mercy. While the materialist, at best, will see it that if I have facility, that's God's grace. If I don't have the facility, something's going wrong in the universe. You know, why is this happening to me? It shouldn't happen to me. Right? What is it? Why do bad things happen to good people? Right? So that's the thing. That shouldn't be the perspective. So that makes sense.
You should say bad things. No, good things happen to bad people.
Yeah, that would be more the thing. Why do good things happen to bad people? Right? We understand bad things happen to good people because it's a bad place. Right? Yeah. So. Yeah. So. Yeah. Chapter 16 summarizes questions and answers. Question 69 of Srimad Bhagavatam is asked by the Supreme Lord of the Four Kumaras. Srimad Bhagavatam 3:16-12. These servants of mine have transgressed against you, not knowing the mind of their master. I shall therefore deem it a favor done to me if you order that, although reaping the fruit of their transgression, they may return to my presence soon, and the time of their exile from my abode may expire before long. Right, so he'll say is that they've transgressed is because we are responsible. Therefore, then the Lord is taking that subservient position that if the Brahmins then deem it important or wise that they should come back quickly because they are servants. They thought before that they were not. They were imposters, so they should just go to the material world. There was no, they say, caveat that they should come back. This was that, but the Lord is amending that you may bless them that they come back quickly. Right? So the Lord approves of their going to the material world, but not for long, just long enough for the pastime. The Kumara's specific reply to the question of the Lord, Bhagavatam 3:16-19, mystics and transcendentalists, by the mercy of the Lord, crossed beyond nescience by ceasing all material desires. It is not possible, therefore, that the Supreme Lord can be favored by others. Right? So, everyone gets benefit by the Lord's grace, so it's not that you can benefit the Lord. Right? But as the pastimes go, then you see that people are blessing him and hoping for his welfare and everything like that. That's culture. That's relationship. But factually, as far as philosophy goes, you can't bless the person who's the origin of all blessings. Right? Because your blessing towards the Lord is still coming from the Lord. So even if it has effect, it's by the Lord's grace. You know? Okay. The rhetorical question asked by the sages in verse 21 does not come under the study. How can you be purified, therefore, by the dust of the path traversed by the brahmanas? And how can you be glorified or made fortunate by the marks of Shrivatsa on your chest? But, so that's just the furtherance of that point, is that everything's from the Lord, so therefore all auspiciousness of the Lord is coming from the Lord himself, since he is auspiciousness. For further questions, this chapter answers questions 53 and 58, or earlier questions. Question 53, Srimad Bhagavatam 3:15:10. I have repeatedly heard about these higher and lower statuses of human life from the mouth of Vyasadeva. In 58, please relate the events of creation after the Viratrupa stage. Adhyaya Prakashita. In the 16th chapter, the Lord accepts the curse made by the Kumaras, who were fearful, because they knew that the Lord had affection for the gatekeepers, who had love for the Lord. The Lord was pleased with the Kumaras' words of praise. Brahma continued to relate the Lord's words to the Kumaras. Their cursing of his gatekeepers was approved by him. He offered the sages apologies for his servants' disrespect. The Lord glorified the Vaishnavas and Brahmanas, saying that even he takes the dust of the feet of the Vaishnavas upon his own head. He said that Lakshmi Devi had given up her flickering nature to serve him steadily due to her own service to the devotees. Right, so because of the Lord's service to the devotees, that's why she's always steady. Right? Does that make sense? So that interaction or that devotion or relationship, that's the main thing. So she is always with those devotees that are surrendered to the Lord, and she's always with the Lord because he's always interacting with the devotees. Does that make sense? But that's her service, because interact with the devotees is what pleases the Lord. Therefore, that's her service. Does this make sense? The Kumaras listened to the fascinating... The Lord then requested the Kumaras to allow his servants to soon return to Vaikuntha. The Kumaras listened to the fascinating words of the Lord with great relish, yet they could not understand whether he was satisfied or disturbed by their actions. The four Kumaras now spoke. They glorified the Lord's words as meant to teach others and protect religious principles. They praised the Lord's affection for his pure devotees and expressed their understanding that they had cursed two false persons. The Lord replied that the punishment awarded to his servants was in fact ordained by him, and that they would soon return to him, due to thinking of him, intensely in anger while within the material world. Delighted to have seen the Lord and having learned of the divine opulences of the Vaishnavas, the sages departed Vaikuntha. The gatekeepers, however, became morose, lost their luster, and fell from Vaikuntha. Brahma then explained to the demigods that these two gatekeepers from Vaikuntha were within the womb of Diti and are the cause of the darkness. Nothing can be done to stop them, as it is the Lord's desire, explained Brahma. He alone will come to our rescue. Shloka Anusharanam. The Lord replies to the four Kumaras. The Lord expresses his love for his devotees. Verses 13 to 25. The four Kumaras remain submissive. 26 to 34, who was actually at fault, the doorkeepers or the four Kumaras? 35 to 37, Brahma's concluding words to the demigods. Verses 1 to 12, the Lord replies to the four Kumaras. The Lord expresses his love for his devotees. The Lord approved the curse and offered the sages apologies for his servants' disrespect. The Lord glorified the Vaishnavas and Brahmanas and requested the Kumaras to allow his servants to soon return to Vaikuntha. Lord Brahma said, after thus congratulating the sages for their nice words, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose abode is in the kingdom of God, spoke as follows. These attendants of mine, Jayan Vijay by name, have committed a great offense against you because of ignoring me, O great sages. I approve of the punishment that you are, that you who are devoted to me have meted out to them. To me, the Brahmana is the highest and most beloved personality. The disrespect shown by my attendants has actually been displayed by me because the doormen are my servants. I take this to be an offense by myself. Therefore, I seek your forgiveness for the incident that has arisen. Footnote 7. It appears that the gatekeepers, the Kumaras, and the Lord himself each took full blame for the curse uttered by the Kumaras. For instance, we see Jayavijaya recognized their mistake and requested leniency that they not forget the Lord. After being cursed by the sages, the doorman said, "It is quite apt that you have punished us for neglecting to respect sages like you. But we pray that due to your compassion at our repentance, the illusion of forgetting the Supreme Personality of Godhead will not come upon us as we go progressively downward." Srimad Bhagavatam 3:15-36. Likewise, the Kumaras expected punishment and prayed to be able to serve the Lord with heart and soul, even in hell. O Lord, we pray that you let us be born in any hellish condition of life, just as long as our hearts and minds are always engaged in the service of your lotus feet. Our words are made beautiful by speaking of your activities, just as tulsi leaves are beautified when offered unto your lotus feet, and as long as our ears are always filled with the chanting of your transcendental qualities. Srimad Bhagavatam 3:15-49. Lord Narayan also took responsibility for his doorkeeper's actions. To me, the Brahmana is the highest and most beloved personality. The disrespect shown by my attendants was actually been displayed by me, because the doormen are my servitors. I take this to be an offense by myself. Therefore, I seek your forgiveness for the incident that has arisen. Right. So, for the devotees, they're taking it. They want to be able to continue devotional service. Right. The doorkeepers want that they never forget the Lord. The Kumaras, then they don't mind taking birth in any difficult situation as long as they can go on hearing and chanting the glories of the Lord. And the Lord then is taking that, the cultural position, like that, begging forgiveness and all this because of the relationship that the doorkeepers are representing him. Right? So we can see for the Lord it's the pastime, for the devotees then there's this aspect of actual, you know, understanding the philosophy. But it's all being done within this context of the pastime. A wrong act committed by a servant leads people in general to blame his master, just as a spot of white leprosy on any part of the body pollutes all the skin. So, just like a government official, he does something wrong, people blame the government. They just say the government's bad. It's just the normal thing. Or let's say something goes wrong in the family, a child is behaving badly, they'll blame the parents. It just is the way it works. So the Lord's pointing this out because it's his culture. That's how it functions. So it should be that everybody is seeing. So for the devotees, then they want to do everything nice because then they represent the Lord. And so that's why people do things nice. Right? Not that, oh, I'm so low, I'm so this, I'm so that, so therefore it doesn't matter what I do. No, it's a matter of that one represents the Lord. Like that. Yeah. Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport to verse 5, "A Vaishnava, therefore, should be fully qualified. As stated in the Bhagavatam, anyone who's become a Vaishnava has developed all the good qualities of the demigod. There are 26 qualifications mentioned in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. A devotee should always see that his Vaishnava qualities increase with the advancement of his Krishna consciousness. Devotee should be blameless because any offense by the devotee is a scar on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The devotee's duty is to be always conscious of his dealings with others, especially with other devotees of the Lord." So, with the devotees, it should be nice because that's how Krishna wants it. But with the non-devotees, you behave properly, then they tend to appreciate Krishna consciousness. Because they'll look at the externals. So then seeing the external is nice, then they'll think, well, maybe Krishna consciousness has something nice about it. Does that make sense? Yeah. The Lord continued, "Anyone in the entire world, even down to the chandala, who lives by cooking and eating the flesh of the dog, is immediately purified if he takes bath and hearing through the ear the glorification of my name, fame, etc. Now you have realized me without doubt. Therefore, I will not hesitate to lop off my own arm if its conduct is found hostile to you, because I am the reservoir of the servitor of my devotees. My lotus feet have become so sacred that they immediately wipe out all sin. And I have acquired such a disposition that the goddess of fortune does not leave me. Even though I have no attachment for her, and others praise her beauty and observe sacred vows to secure from her even a slight favor. Okay, so he's pointing out he's the servant of his devotees, and because of that, that's why all good fortune is there. Right? Does that make sense? That's his point. And so he's saying even though he doesn't have attachment to the goddess of fortune, she stays around him because of this service to the Vaishnavas. Right? Because the Vaishnavas are assisting her. So you're doing something in connection with her. So therefore the Lord is pleased. But he's saying the materialists, they're doing vows, doing worship, doing all kinds of things to get her favor, but she doesn't stay around very long. So that doesn't impress her. Because she's a servant of Krishna. And so therefore her servants are the devotees, and so the Lord is attached to the devotees, therefore she's attached to the Lord. Right? That's how the Lord's saying it. So we can understand from this that it's a very natural position that Vaishnavas are going to point out that their position is not very special. That's only by the grace of the devotees, and that other devotees have more special benefit. Does that make sense? So all those histories that we saw with Nard Muni and all the great devotees, that they're all saying that they're not actually that great of a devotee. And they'll point out some reasons why, you know, someone, whatever facility or position that they have, that we would connect with devotional service, that would be there because of some other reasons. Does that make sense? So, or the point is it's not themselves. We are almost visited by Sai Baba. Ah, here he is. Those things in his hands are called Sai. They're for planting asparagus. The size, those are for planting asparagus.
Oh, asparagus.
Yeah. How, I don't know, but they dig holes. They do something. So why it's like that, I don't know. But because there was a rule that whoever was occupying whatever country it was, I think it was Philippines or someplace over, no, maybe in China, they wouldn't allow them to keep weapons. But they could use their farm tools. So for planting asparagus, that's these. You know, for thrashing rice, that's nunchucks. And the tanfa, that was what you put in the grinding stone to turn it. So then they developed martial systems based on farm tools. I do not enjoy the oblations offered by the sacrifices in the sacrificial fire, which is one of my own mouths, with the same relish as I do the delicacies overflowing with ghee, which are offered to the mouths of the brahmanas, who have dedicated to me the results of their activities, and who are ever satisfied with my prasad. So, serving the devotees, then he's saying, it gives him more pleasure than serving himself. Right? So that's why when in our service to Krishna, we don't technically directly serve Krishna. Because as Krishna has pointed out, that doesn't give us as much satisfaction. What we do is we're serving the devotees serving Krishna. So we're assisting the spiritual master, serving the previous acharyas headed by Rupa Goswami, serving Srimati Radharani, serving Krishna. That gives Krishna the most pleasure. Right? Yes?
Sometimes we see that we can develop a relationship with the spiritual master because he's present, he's person that we can see, we can talk with the devotees. That's, let's say, easy. And with Krishna, seeing him in the temple with the male unified eyes, sometimes it's very difficult. So the only thing that we see is the spiritual master and the devotees. Will it be enough to progress?
Yes, of course. Because that's the whole point, is that Krishna considers if we're the devotee of the devotee, that's actually a devotee. Someone who says, I'm Krishna's devotee, without the devotees, is not actually a devotee. Because in this case, technically there's only one devotee. That's Radharani. Everybody else is the devotee of her. So if one thinks one's directly, then that's not going to get very far. Because that spot's, there's only one spot and it's been eternally taken. So it's not that it's going to open up anytime soon. Like that. Is that okay? No, that's the whole point. It's like that lady in Mexico City, I think after the program there, she came up to Prabhupada after because he was talking about remembering Krishna and everything at the time of death and that. And she says, is it all right if I remember you? Right? Just a new person, never been to the temple. She says, you know, remember you, because her point was the same. I can understand you, I can relate to you, I don't know Krishna. So that position's there. Or you explained that Koresh, that servant of Ramanujacharya, he would face, Ramanuja would face the deities, he would say with his back to the deity facing facing Ramanuja, you know, like that. That, you know, we should understand, because there's only one example of this. This is not something we should be doing. This is a side point. Delicacies overflowing with ghee means it's nicely cooked and it's cooked with ghee. So Krishna's not mentioning anything to do with cholesterol here. I am the master of my unobstructed internal energy, but and the water of the Ganges is the remnant left after my feet are washed. So he's pointing out his position, but his point is that the devotees are even greater, because he is the Lord of everything. His internal potency is unobstructed. Whatever it's going to do will happen. It's not a matter of it runs into a problem. Like when we apply our internal potency, we run into a lot of problems. But the Lord's internal potency doesn't, and he's the master of it. So it's not that it's going on and then he has to worry that it'll take on its own life and take over the world and stuff like that, you know. So you won't get any sci-fi themes out of this one, right? You know? So it's just a matter of it's going to remain. He's the Lord and it's unobstructed. So that means whatever he desires happens. There's nothing less. Is that... That water sanctifies the three worlds along with Lord Shiva, who bears it on his head. Like, because some will take Shiva as supreme, but he's holding the Ganga water on his head because it sanctifies him. Right? That's why he likes to do this. If I can take the dust of the feet of the Vaishnava on my head, who will refuse to do the same? So his point is, if I'm worshipping the Vaishnavas, who else can say, oh, I don't need to do that? Right? I worship Krishna, I don't have to worry about the Vaishnavas. Because Krishna, who is the worshipable Lord on all accounts, is worshipping the Vaishnavas. Yeah. 8-9. The purports of verses 8 and 9 of Śrīla Prabhupāda display the lessons to be taken from the Lord's statement. The conclusion is that if one can feed a Brahmana or Vaishnava, it is better than performing hundreds of thousands of sacrifices. In this age, therefore, is recommended that Hare Nama, Chaitanya Charitamrita Adi 17:21, chanting the holy name of God and pleasing the Vaishnavas are the only means to elevate oneself to spiritual life. Because like Mataji was saying, we don't understand Krishna, but the name is there. So we can associate with the name, we can associate with the Vaishnavas, we can serve the name and the Vaishnavas, so like that, then that's going to be the perfection of how we're going to develop. The Lord says that although he is the predominating factor of the internal energy, and although the material world is sanctified just by the water that has washed his feet, he has the greatest respect for the Brahmana and the Vaishnava. When the Lord himself offers so much respect to the Vaishnava and the Brahmana, how can one deny such respect to such personalities? We could say, well, the Brahmanas aren't necessarily devotees, but the principle is that they're following the Vedic culture. Because someone who understands the Brahman follows the Vedic culture, they're Brahmanas. Right? Then you actually get the full benefit. Even if someone claims to be a Brahmana but doesn't practice, by respecting them, you're respecting the position of Brahman, even though they may not be in it. And so even that you get benefit. Right? But not as much benefit as if they actually are practicing. So the idea is, since people should practice the Vedic culture, that's the actual culture to function from. Right? It actually is, being the universal culture, it will work in any sphere, in any species. Right? So it's not that, oh, it's, some will say, oh, that doesn't work in this species of life or that species of life. Right? No, but it works in all, because being universal, then it has that principle. So there's no species of life, if you follow the Vedic culture, in dealings that it won't work nicely. Right? Is there any culture that if you're respectful, they won't appreciate it? Right? Or you're considerate, or you've said something, you'll take responsibility and do it. Right? So none of these things will be a problem. Right? We see in all people, they have care for their family members, right? For their children. Right, for the possession. So if you deal with all these properly, right? People think, because I'm wealthier, I'm older, I'm more powerful, I'm more influential, I've done more than you. You know, I've been around longer than you, I have more experience than you, that you should respect them. That's what the Vedic culture says. Right? So all these considerations. Does that make sense? So it is the universal culture. So the Brahmins follow that. That's why the Brahmins are dear. Just for following that, they're dear. Because that's the culture that everyone should be following. And then if they've understood the perfection of that to be a devotee, then that's even better. Right? Because the devotee is automatically a Brahmin, because they're following the path of Brahman. Does that make sense? Because the occupation being the secondary aspect of varna and ashram. Right? Then the ashram being brahminical, then following that properly, that makes one a Brahmin. Does that make sense? Right? Now, as a devotee, you identify with that, therefore that becomes the prominent element. For a materialist, then they're following the brahminical culture, but then by ashram, I mean varna, they'll have a different position, so that's generally how people identify them. Right? Does that make sense? If someone's a businessman, they'll identify him as a businessman. But if they're a devotee, they'll identify them as a devotee. And then their particular activity may be business. Does that make sense? So it comes out different. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the idea. So Vaishnava means the realized Brahman. So anybody who's on that platform then is Brahman on that capacity. Now, whether they're Brahman in occupation, that's another thing. That's secondary. It doesn't really matter. Because if you have the proper understanding to engage it in Krishna's service, it gives the effect of the brahminical occupation. Because brahminical occupation is simply doing the ashram duties as an occupation. Right? They're not separate duties, as you'll find within the others. The Brahmanas, the cows, and the defenseless creatures of my own body, those whose faculty of judgment has been impaired by their own sin, look upon these as distinct from me. So that's also the point, is that if you're dealing with Brahmins, cows, and defenseless creatures, then the reason for seeing it the way we do is because of the connection to Krishna. If it's just because it's good and nice and proper, that's not actually very good. Does that make sense? You know, it's better than being a hedonist and being self-centered. Yes, we will agree with that. The sophisticated social person is better than the self-centered, you know, how you say, social misfit. Right? But it's still not as good as the considerations are because of the connection with the Lord. Because ultimately, otherwise what happens is all these considerations eventually will come back to them. because you see that that aspect is going to benefit me. If all people are nice, then what does that mean? People will deal with me nice. Right? If everybody's equal, then I'll get an equal chance also. You understand? So ultimately, it's still self-centered, but at least you're willing to consider others in that self-centeredness. Both that they can, you'll benefit and they'll benefit. Right? So that's why it's considered better. But Krishna's taking it to the next level, that it's connected to him. That's why it's good. Right? So it's not just this is my duties, this is dharma. Right? Or because we're on the platform of the soul and God's transcendental, so therefore. No, we're taking it to the personal aspect that they're directly the body of the Lord. Right? So because of that, that's why we worry about all these social platitudes. Right? So, altruism, yeah, that's it. Altruism, philanthropy, these different considerations are only important because of their connection to the Lord. So therefore, you're taking care of the Lord. But in here, you most of the Brahmins, the cows, and the defenseless. In the modern, basically, it's only defenseless creatures. Generally, not cows and not Brahmins. Right? You know, it's just like, how many people like teachers? Not that many. How many people like lawyers? Right? Even less. Right? How many people like doctors? Right? Only if it worked. Otherwise, then, you know, nobody has much faith. Right? Does that make sense? So, there isn't that. And cows... You know, to quote from, what is it, the guy non sequitur. You know that? Maybe I'm saying it wrong. Non sequitur, right? That comic strip, like that. He says, cows, I love them, whether they're on 4 feet or in a burger. You know? So that's the whole problem is, you know, and this is a guy who likes them. So that's the problem, is these higher elements, the mode of goodness, the mode of knowledge, the mode of goodness, the lifestyle, that's not appreciated. So it's only defenseless creatures, and it's only ones you consider defenseless. It's not all creatures. It's just which ones are, you know, happen to be targeted today. Does that make sense? So that's the whole difficulty. So it's not the Brahmins, the cows, the old men, the young boys and the women. It's not broad like that. It's just wherever you pick and choose to make it function at the time. That's why it's a speculative system. That's why it's not very solid. So Krishna's saying that they're his own body. So that's why all these doing nice and doing good things are important, because they're connected to the Lord. So giving in charity to defenseless creatures or putting in your time then is going to be, that's going to be beneficial as long as you see it that way. Otherwise, you'll get pious credit. But it won't have the devotional element unless you see it in connection with the Lord. Does that make sense? Because Arjuna, that's what he was worried about in the opening of Gita. That all the charitable works will stop. That means they're doing plenty of charitable works. Taking care of Brahmins, cows, and defenseless creatures. He says that'll all stop, so the whole culture will fall apart. But Krishna's pointing out is, but he's not seeing it in connection with Krishna, therefore it's a failure. And as soon as you see there, then it all has some value. Does it make sense? So that's the whole point, is that one's stuck in the material world in a good situation, or stuck in a bad situation, you're still in the material world. Right? You know, it's just like you have the high... what do you call it? You know, in prisons you have high security, right? High security, or is that the word?
Maximum security.
Maximum security. And then you have the low level for these, you know, businessmen and all that, right? You know, that's just kind of like it looks like a high school, you know, with cyclone fences around it. That's as good as, you know, that's all it is, you know. But in any case, the guy is in prison, right? Whether there's a 20-foot wall outside or a cyclone fence, he's not getting out. So that's the whole point. So whether you're in the material world with great facilities and a great view, or, you know, you don't have such a great view and there's, you know, like that, it's still you're in the material world. So Only when it's connected to Krishna, then these things have a value. One is if it's connected to Krishna, then even if you don't have a good view, you're okay because you're serving Krishna. And if you do have a good view, if it's useful for serving Krishna, great. You can increase 360 degrees. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point that Krishna is bringing out, is the connection to Him is what's important. If it's not connected to Him, that's when it's not important. So sometimes it'll be taken that, oh, we don't care about the philanthropic aspects. We do, only if they're connected to Krishna. I think that was Jayadvaitamara's complaint about food for life. Yeah. Is that some places, food for life, we were Hare Krishnas and we're doing food for, and we're distributing prasad. But some places, we were just an organization that's distributing food. So he was saying, is that the one, that's devotional. The other one, what has it got to do with anything? It'll be agyata sukriti, but not. But the point is if people know, then they're getting bhakti. It's better than nothing. But the point is for us, why would we present it in a way, especially in a country, that couldn't care less if we're Haris or not?
Why did you?
Because they're embarrassed. They think, because we're not doing social work, we're not very good. And they don't have faith that we're doing the real social work. And that you have these secondaries also. So the primary should be there, then secondary is great. If you can do both, great. If you can only do one, do the primary. Right? You know, if you're sitting there in some place that doesn't like devotion or religion, then you might present it that way, because agyata sukriti is good. But if you have countries where that's fine and religious groups always do these things, then why you wouldn't want to present it that way? Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the principle, is that Krishna's saying here is that if it's connected to Him, anything's good. If it's not connected to Him, nothing's good. So that's the thing. Is that's why we can't be figured out what we're saying. I mentioned once before is that we had one. He's from the school here, and then he grew up and he became, I think, a PA for an American senator. Either a senator or a governor, I don't know, but for the state. And so he would be around when, you know, the senator and the other politicians were discussing points. And sometimes, I don't know if they would ask him or he would just say his own opinion. So they had this idea that, because I think they were Democrats, this group. No, maybe they were Republicans. Can't remember whichever it was. But they always says they couldn't figure out what he was. Because depending on the situation, he would be speaking things that would be Democratic, or he would be speaking things that were Republican. And so he would bewilder them. You know? But good job, nice. It was logical what he said, but, you know, that's not our platform. That's their platform. Or, yeah, that's our, you know, so... That's the thing. Krishna consciousness can't be understood what it is. Does that make sense? So that's the thing, is that it, because it has all the elements, it's complete. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the thing, is that it has to be. Those who... The faculty of judgment has been impaired by their own sin, look upon these as distinct from me. So even they try to do these things, either they're in support of them or against them, the reason for it is because of their disconnection with the Lord. Right? Someone saying, oh, that's all Maya, that's sentiment. It's disconnected from the Lord. Oh, no, this is important, we have to do this, but it's not in connection with the Lord. It's because of our, you know, our impurity. They are just like furious serpents, and they are angrily torn apart by the bills of the vulture-like messengers of Yamaraj, the superintendent of sinful persons. On the other hand, they captivate my heart, who are gladdened in heart, and who, their lotus faces enlightened by nectarian smiles, respect the brahmanas, even though the brahmanas utter harsh words. Right? So they're glad in heart, and they're happy, and they respect, despite the strength of the, right? In other words, the culture's there. We're following or not following. It may be pleasant, it may not be pleasant. But the position is there, and if that respected it, Krishna becomes pleased. They look upon the brahmanas as my own self and pacify them by praising them in loving words, even as a son would appease an angry father, or as I am pacifying you. So in other words, the cultural aspect is more important to Krishna. It's not who's right or wrong. It's the cultural aspect. But that cultural aspect is based on what is right and wrong. But it's not the right and wrong, it's the culture. So many times we take it, it's the right and wrong. We're thinking, oh, this guy's wrong, and so this. Maybe, but that doesn't mean because he's wrong that the culture's not followed in how you deal. Does that make sense? So that is there. Someone's culturally a criminal, you deal in one way. But if someone has been a good person and does something wrong, that's different. It has to be dealt according to that. So that's the position. So when that is happening, that pleases Krishna. Because then you're seeing the personal aspect, the culture. But at the same time, it's the culture has a foundation. So it has right and wrong based on the Vedic literature. But still, you're applying all the cultural aspects. Of course, that takes endeavor, it takes effort, it takes time, and unfortunately it takes having purity and culture oneself. That's the weak point of the whole thing. Right? But for devotees, then that comes naturally, because by the chanting process and associating with devotees, all the good qualities come. So one doesn't have to worry. They will come. The qualification to do it comes, but one has to make the endeavor. Right? Is that yeah? Okay. According to Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, the Lord says, I am controlled by those who praise brahmanas, who have committed offense even more than that. I am controlled by those who praise brahmanas who have committed offense, and even more than that, please them. I am controlled. So we can't use the thing is that the person is living a brahminical lifestyle. It's understood their brahminical lifestyle. They do something wrong, and then we say, oh, they're not a brahmin. That's the common thing. You know, the head pujari is doing, he's been doing, you know, for the last 10 years, doing every night, does something stupid. Oh, he's not a brahmin. So now we can deal with them in whatever way we want. That Krishna is pointing out, that does not work. He says he's controlled by those who praise, who have committed offense. He's pointing this out. He's not saying, yes, I appreciate those who praise Brahmins who are doing everything nice. He's pointing out, I praise who even deal without that. Because that means culture. Because the other one is we're just doing that because it's hierarchy. And if I get in that position, I would expect to have, you know, be respected or have control. But that doesn't mean that we actually have respect. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, is if you can deal according to the etiquette, even when others are not, then it's proper. If you're dealing with people who never do, then the etiquette is to deal with them according to their nature. Right? In other words, if you're in Sin City, you have to deal how they deal. Right? But if you're dealing with someone who's always been cultured, then something goes wrong, you still deal with them as they're the same cultured person. Just this mistake is there. And that has to be corrected. Because being cultured, they know what's right, what's wrong. And then for some reason or another, known or unknown, they deviated. Does that make sense? And you deal in a way to please them. Right? So you speak in a way that makes them happy. Doesn't mean that whatever has to be corrected is not corrected. Because it'll be taken, oh, you just let it go. No, it's not let go, but it's dealt with in a cultured way that everything actually works out. So they're still in their position, and what's wrong is corrected. Right? So it's not an option to remove from the position. It's a matter of it's corrected. Does that make sense? Yes.
So we see in the case with the Kumaras, Lord didn't punish them for their mistake.
Yes.
They understood their mistake and then they just continued as they are.
Yeah, and now they'll be very, very careful. Because now they know even a doorkeeper in Vaikuntha is the Lord's personal associate. You know? And now they also know the glory of just the devotee. Anybody who's connected to the Lord is special. Yeah. So that's the whole point, is that being the devotees, being Brahmins as a community, that means you have to deal with them as Brahmins. It's not that we pick and choose on when they're Brahmins and when they're not. You know what I'm saying? Like that. That's the whole point. Because if we're going to say, oh, they're not Brahmins, then the thing is well, what's our qualification? Right? And then according to Manu, what would be our reactions for whatever we've done? So if we want to be judged by those, the non-Brahminical methods, then we can use those non-Brahminical methods on others. But if we were going, expect that for ourselves, we have to use that for others. Because Brahmins, it's by knowledge. It's by cultivating the knowledge, putting in the proper association, that everything will come back to normal. Because these other methods, those are for those that aren't going, they're too attached, they won't correct themselves. That's why they're there. That's why as it goes down, it becomes more and more severe. Simply because if it's not that severe, they won't do it. You know, just like, what is it? The saying that locks keep honest people honest. Right? Means if the lock is there, the honest person will think, oh, this is not good. If it wasn't there, they might get distracted and do something they shouldn't. But for someone who is not honest, a lock just means it's a little more trouble. That's all. You know, something more to fiddle with before you get in the house. That's all. Right? So for them, the reaction has to be stronger, because for the one, just simply having a lock would correct their attitude. You know what I'm saying? Or do you think, oh, hey, let's check the guy's email, and you go up and there's a password. Oh, okay. Then you just drop it. Right? Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. So like that. So that's the whole idea. But for someone who's criminal mentality, these things don't stop. That's why there has to be a very strong reaction. Because it works. I am controlled by those who worship the Brahmanas who utter harsh words, because that means they really have character. They see the Brahmanas, like before, it was interesting. This is not a matter of the culture, but just to show an effect, is that the preachers were so strong before, right? Very, very strong, very, very blunt. But everybody would be inspired. And we see everything would go very, very nicely. But now you have to be very, very careful what you say to who and what context, and everything has to be so politically correct. So it's not about the individual. It's only if you're politically correct, we respect you. If you're not politically correct, we don't respect you. So it's not about Brahminical culture. So then the effect also in their own personal life is also very less. Right? Does that make sense? Doesn't make sense. Does make sense. Does that make sense? So you don't see that dynamic kind of aspect. Individuals, yes. Right? Those who are in touch with those who respect, actually have respect, then you see they have, it works much stronger. But those who are all politically correct, it's never prosperous. Right? Does that make sense? Because ultimately, the ones who actually manage, make things happen, aren't the ones who are politically correct. The ones who are successful hire politically correct people to get on the surface things done. But they manage according to, traditional, elements of management that have always worked. Does this make sense?
Animal phone.
Yeah. It just comes out the same. So it's just, does that make sense? Yeah. So the whole point is that the laws of nature are what they are. And it's not whether you talk about them nicely or not, they're still the same. Like that. You follow them, they work. You don't follow them, they don't work. Does this make sense?
Yeah.
we touched upon a sober note here?
No.
No, okay. Of course not. They see the Brahmins as non-different from me and remain satisfied even by harsh words. They pacify them, praising them like a good son praises an angry father, with words filled with love, saying, "You do not speak rough words, but rain a shower of merciful nectar for the highest benefit." Right? Because they see what's the benefit of what's been saying rather than the context in which it was said. Right? So you take the essence. So that's the whole point, is devotees can take the essence. So that's what pleases Krishna, because the essence is Him. They please them with soft addresses, such as, "O masters, O ocean of mercy, I am controlled by them just as I am controlled by you," or Bhrigu. The Lord, because then the Kumaras are then speaking in a very nice way. Right? So then He's controlled by them. The Lord then requested the Kumaras to allow His servants to soon return to Vaikuntha, even though He technically, He can counteract, but He just wants their blessings also, because it's about the Brahmins. So if they're pleased with the arrangement of the pastime goes so much nicer. Right? Of course, those who are honest will be pleased, but that's the whole point, because He wants, they as devotees, He wants them to be pleased. "These servants of mine have transgressed against you, not knowing the mind of their master. I shall therefore deem it a favor done to me if you order that, although reaping the fruit of their transgression, they may return to my presence soon, and the time of their exile from my abode may expire before long." Verse 12. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explains. The Lord says, "Therefore, Tat, not seeing the intention of their master by the will of providence, these two should quickly go to a place suitable for their offense they committed to you, and then return to me, Itam. This is my request. O Master, you say that those who commit offense to the Brahmanas commit offense to you. Why do you again show affection for these two, for those two?" And Krishna says, "I cannot control myself. It is not possible to give up my natural qualities. Since punishment is also my mercy to them, not punishment, may the two servants quickly live, vihasa, with me again." Right. So if they've committed offense, why would you want them around? No, because they're my servants. Right? They may make a mistake, so may that be quickly corrected. So whatever needs to be done to correct them, so the four Kumaras have taken it that the way to get corrected is to go to the material world. But Krishna is saying, let that happen, but let them very quickly come back, because they're His servants. Right? So this idea of eternal damnation, that there's no such concept of that in the spiritual world. That's something of the material world. Which is funny, because everything here is temporary, but we talk in, you know, eternal damnation, that everything's temporary. Right? So we have it backwards. Everything's temporary, but damnation should be eternal. There, it's everything's eternal, damnation should be temporary. Right? So that's the difference between the spiritual and the material view. Okay. Yes?
This concept of removing someone from their position, temporarily that's okay, like it is here?
Temporarily for correcting the situation. Right. So in other words, if it can be corrected without removal, why would you remove? But if it needs to be removed, then you do. Just like you'd see, Prabhupada might take someone from one position they're in and then stick them in a different one, because that environment might not have been favorable. But a different environment of the same service would be. Or he would remove them from the service, then they would spend time with him, traveling, preaching, and getting that kind of association. Because much of the time in management, one forgets about these essential points. It gets distracted by the secondary. So when they see the primary, then he put them right back in the same position. You know, or another, you know, but an equal position somewhere. So this idea is that no, one has proven oneself, one can never do. Where does that come from? That simply comes from actually the sense of revenge, right? That something's been done wrong. I don't appreciate that, so I take it as a personal offense.
So it's envy.
It's touted as justice. And being cultured and all that. So we use all these nice terminologies from Pranamoy. But then the point is it doesn't have any connection to the Lord, so it's not reality. That's the whole difficulty. Right? Yeah. But it's popular. It is very popular. Okay, verses 13 to 25. The four Kumaras remain submissive. The Kumaras praised the Lord's affection for his pure devotees and expressed their understanding that they had cursed two faultless persons. The Lord replies that the punishment awarded to his servants was in fact ordained by him, and they would soon return to him due to thinking of him intensely in anger while within the material world, right? Because at the time of death, they're going to be thinking of him. So therefore, they're going to, because the point is, you remember Krishna at the time of death, you go to Krishna. So that's the point, is that but it's recommended it's favorable. Yes?
I'm just thinking that the Lord and his devotees having pastimes, then when they're born, the whole universe is like, it's really disturbed.
Because otherwise, the mighty Hercules came out and destroyed the jelly bean demon. Right? You know, one of them he stepped on, the other one he threw in his mouth and chewed up. And then everybody's, you know, going, you have these roars of praise and, probably not. So something that's so big that everybody is so disturbed, then this is some fun. You know? Yeah, otherwise, you know, who's going to care? Yeah. Brahma continued, even though the sages had been bitten by the serpent of anger, their souls were not satiated with hearing the Lord's lovely and illuminating speech, which was like a series of Vedic hymns. So this anger didn't cover their position, so they were still able to function in the devotional platform. If it had covered so much, then they wouldn't act in the devotional platform, they'd be dealt with differently. Because you deal with the person according to their nature, how they respond. So that's the thing, is if someone's done something wrong and they're committed to that wrong and don't see the actual correct, and that correct is based on scripture, right? Then that's then you have to deal in that way. But if they see how it's wrong, then you have to deal very differently. Right? Okay. The Lord's excellent speech was difficult to comprehend because of its momentous import and its most profound significance because of the devotion. They were talking about technical things of Brahman, no problem. Right? But they're talking about devotion here. And so that's the unique thing for them. That's the new element. The sages heard it with wide open ears and pondered it as well. But although hearing, they could not understand what he intended to do. Right? Because you've heard all this, but what's actually going to happen? Because he's saying that they should be punished, but at the same time, may they return quickly. And, you know, so everybody is actually being blessed here. Everybody's taking the humble position. Everybody's being blessed. So how is this going to work out? That they're not, they can't really tell where this is going. 13 to 14. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur states extensively and with abundant reason the flow of the Lord's dialogue in his purport to this verse. Hearing attentively the words which were true, splendid, made of carefully chosen syllables, difficult to understand because of deep meaning, with incomprehensible intention, and difficult external meaning, they pondered them. Does the Lord praise us or condemn us? Will he arrange for the punishment we have decided, limit it or destroy it? Will he blame us for the offense, or will he treat his two servants with great mercy? We do not know his intention. The joy of the Lord is evident, but the censure of the Lord is not expressed directly. The Lord's censure is understood because of the conjecture of the frightened Kumaras and the revelation given through the Lord's clever use of words. In addressing the sages who were supposed to be omniscient, he said, these are my two associates, because they didn't know that. Right? That was the whole. So they can understand by what he said, and the way he said it, that they're being censured, but they don't technically know how it's going to work out.
Mark?
Yes.
Why did they care that why did they are personal?
They're just wondering what will happen. What was being brought out here is they have no idea how this is going to work out. That's the principle. They just can't see where this is going, because each syllable, it doesn't say word here, it says syllable. Right? Each syllable has been very carefully spoken and exact, and what its ultimate intention is and everything, they can't tell. Because the Lord's intelligence is so much deeper than anybody else's. So all it is they can't see where it's going. To them it doesn't matter, because their position is you do as you please. So if you want to remove it or leave it, do whatever. But the point is this, that's being brought out, is no one can understand the mind of the Lord. So that's why then one goes with the pastime. Because from before, how is it that means what would be the symptom of we don't know what the Lord's doing, so therefore we leave that? In our previous, a little bit earlier discussion, then means we have two things. One is we're being harshly dealt with by the Brahmins, and we let that run, we're not disturbed. And two, the situations we are in may not be ideal. So both of these, we don't know the Lord's intention, because His intelligence is so much greater. Therefore, when these things come up, we're not worried about it. Does that make sense? So whatever facility we have, whatever the community of the devotees deal, that we're not, because the Lord has His plan. Does that make sense? Yeah, so then it becomes nice. Does that make sense to you? This indicates, O fools, you accursed my associates. You have used too much force. So that's what he's saying. But he's saying it very, very nicely. Does that make sense? So it's just more culture. It's just like among certain circles that, dress in a, more cultured way. If they meet someone who's really wearing something not right, then they'll actually go out of their way and then they'll say, oh, that's nice. And so the person will think, oh, hey, that's nice. But everybody else in the group knows this is, wow, they just got, Yeah, something like that. Ignoring my intentions, they offended you. Right? So both of these are there. Is that, fools, you cursed my associates. You've used too much force. That's against them and against his associate. Ignoring my intentions, they offended you. So that's why they can't quite tell. Because he's saying both of these. He's saying it's my fault, but what it means is that it is his fault, but it also means that his servants are at fault because they did something that makes him at fault. And at the same time as there was associates, they shouldn't have been cursed. Right? So by that one sentence, he's in that way pointed out both of their weaknesses. But done it in such a pleasant, cultured way. However, since previous to offending the Kumaras, the doorkeepers had not ignored the Lord's intentions, this is a crooked utterance of the Lord, indicating that the Lord was actually angry with the Kumaras. Using the fourth type of atishayokti, exaggeration, right? So that means there's four kinds of exaggeration, I don't know them, the Lord has reversed the cause and effect of ignoring the Lord and offending the Kumaras. Right, so it means it's so in exaggeration, he's reversed what's the cause, what's the effect, and then exaggerating on that, then it's just like the person is let's say doing something in the kitchen, And you tell him, oh, don't do it like that, do it like this. He says, I know what I'm doing here. This, you know. And then you come back a few minutes later and it's a complete disaster. And then you come and says, wow, yeah, definitely, this is the way to do it. You understand? So that exaggeration, you know, then makes it, so that's what the Lord's doing. The doorkeepers offended the Kumaras and thus ignored the Lord's intentions. Thus he is not blaming the doorkeepers. The punishment is permitted by me. That's what he said. If it had not been given my permission, then the punishment ordered by you would not take place at all, since it is later said, quote, though I am capable of nullifying the curse, I do not desire to do so. So it is simply by the Lord's arrangement. The reason is that you would feel worthless if I canceled the curse. My respect for the Brahmins intoxicates you. So he wouldn't want people to feel bad about it. So that's also is that if you want someone to understand what's wrong, then you should inspire them with the ability to do what's correct. But it's always the thing, no, they should feel bad. And I've been feeling bad for so long, they should feel bad for that much time. Then we can discuss maybe, but, you know, eternal's better. You know? But just so that I won't look bad, therefore we'll consider a 50-50 here. But, you know, at least, or maybe 51-49, you know? I consider that I have committed the offense, end quote. This shows the Lord's great love for the doorkeepers, taking them as his very self. But because if he considers he's done the offense because of them, you must have great affection. Right? You know, like any friend of yours is a friend of mine. That means that you know, whatever they're doing, then that's what I would approve of. So that connection is very strong. I have attained fame as a Tirtha because of you, end quote. These are just words of respect for the sages. Right? Because the Brahmins respect the Lord, therefore he say, therefore I've attained this position of being a Tirtha because of this. Right? Does that make sense? So he's just showing that respect to the sages. Quote, I should cut off my own arm, end quote. Since the Lord identifies the doorkeepers as his arms, the statement shows his great attachment to him, to them. Quote, my feet are made pure by service to you, end quote. This is again just external praise by the Lord. Does the Lord's foot dust become pure by service to the Brahmins? Does that destroy all contamination? By that service does Lakshmi never give up the Lord? Quote, I do not eat the offering of the sacrificer, end quote. The Brahmanas are fond of eating, therefore you must be fed. It is well known to the people that I eat through the mouth of the Brahmana. Gasham charata, eating morsels, can also mean that like a respectable cow grazing in the field, the Brahmanas rejoices by the respect given by me. That you think what you think gives me happiness is not service to me. Right, so what one is thinking gives happiness to Krishna is not actually what makes him happy. What makes him happy is the service to the devotees. Right? So in the Brahminical culture, by following that, you're respecting the Brahmins and working with everybody in connection with the Lord. That's what actually pleases the Lord. So it's the relationship aspect that pleases the Lord. Yes?
And this is the Madhyam platform, actually.
Yes, yes. Because the Madhyam would see that. That's why, for us, the Madhyam culture is what is discussed. So whether one's neophyte or an Uttama, one acts according to the Madhyama platform. So the point is we may be neophytes, but because we know what the Madhyama culture is, we make that effort to function at that. So we get the benefit of the Madhyama culture. That's why these other things where acting on the neophyte culture is not recommended. Like that. But one may act that way, but because of the Brahminical situation, that's not taken very seriously. Right? It's only discussed in a negative way so that it's not done. but it's not that the person has somehow or another become, how do you say, changed by it. Right? A devotee is still a devotee, so that remains. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So in the beginning of the pastimes, it is as if they dealt with one another on the neophyte platform, but then the Lord brings them up.
Yes, brings them up so they see in that better platform. So the difference that we make in the Uttama and the neophyte platform, generally, is that the Uttama platform, they make no distinction. Because in the material world, what's the point of the distinction? Yeah. But in the spiritual world, then naturally you do make distinction, because there's a it is real there. The distinction is real. Here the distinctions aren't real. Like that. You know, whether it's pebbles, sand, or gold, is that one of the things? Is they're all technically the same. It's all material. It won't make you more spiritual. So in that way, there's no distinction. But as the Madhyama, since you're preaching, people are functioning within these social considerations. You have to be able to work with them to get them to appreciate what you're saying. Right? So therefore, the etiquettes are followed. So this idea of not following etiquettes, it doesn't matter. That's only if you're not going to work within the social system. If you want to go out into the forest and not worry about it, then fine. But if you're going to work in the social system, then you have to be... So therefore, that's why the Madhyama platform is the recommended platform. But it's not that the Uttama makes no distinction. It's that they don't make any material distinction because of the principle is that it doesn't matter. Right? For themselves. But if they're going to preach, then they'll make distinction. So they'll take the Madhyama platform. But in the spiritual world, then everybody functions like that. But even there, one would think that they're functioning as neophytes. Because in there, there's the most consideration of the social. Does that make sense? So for the pastimes, then, they act. So this idea is, no, we should think as we're advanced. No, because in the spiritual world, they don't think like that. So therefore...
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jainatai Gaurastevina.
When we preach in some levels with different cultures and some groups, so it's okay when to take some signs of it. This culture is like, because when people better take your knowledge or something.
What does that mean?
Like, for example, when you preach to businessmen, you cannot walk very simple.
No, you don't. It means you should dress nicely. But you either dress nicely as a devotee or dress nicely as whichever works for the situation.
It's only one problem, then usually when we are neophytes, we get attached to this. Like,
yeah, so therefore better dress as a devotee, right?
Sometimes in India, devotees, even in India, in a place like India, they would quote Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, and they would say that he wore a coat and he wore a car, and he could do that for preaching.
Yeah, but for preaching. If it's not for preaching, why would he do it? Because he also mentioned you don't take the car to go down to buy medicine. He says you walk. So he also said that. So put the two together. If it's for preaching, then what does it matter? If it's not for preaching, then. The point is if the coat works, you use it. If you don't need the coat, how many times do you see pictures of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is wearing the coat? So one, it must mean it's cold. Otherwise, why would he be wearing a coat? And two, it's a situation where it's just like you see when he's with the devotees, pictures of him with the devotees, he's not wearing the coat. But when he's receiving the governor of Bengal, he's wearing the coat. So that one means he's the governor of Bengal, so you know, that's worth dressing up. And two, it must have been cold, that it would have been appropriate to wear the coat. Otherwise, in the middle of summer, if you're wearing the coat, that would be stupid. Right? It's like, what is his name? Modi wears a wool vest, right? Now, does he wear a wool vest in the middle of summer? No, it'll be a cotton or a silk vest. So if it's useful, you do. But just to say, because you're attached to it, no, that's not important. So that's where you have to distinguish. But as long as even you're attached to it, if it is useful, then you'll get purified. So it'll be mixed. It will be useful, but at the same time, they are attached. So you're getting both.